This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll get an update on an ongoing story that's impacting taxpayers in the Bayou City. We'll hear some breaking news out of Barra County, and we'll learn what has the Twitterverse so very excited. We'll also talk to State Representative Briscoe Cade on why he was blocked from giving a speech at Texas Southern University, and we'll conclude with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on how the Democrats are continuing to slip into the abyss of electoral irrelevance. Welcome back, friends and neighbors, to this week's program of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. We've got an action-packed program this week. We'll be covering news happening all across the Lone Star State that's impacting you, the taxpayer. We'll get started talking to the Texas Scorecard local bureaus. We'll go down to Charles Blaine with the Houston Bureau. Charles, you have an update on a story that we were talking about a few weeks ago. Mayor Turner was pushing a big property tax hike in the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, and so there's been some changes on this. Tell us a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, Tony, there's actually for once some good news for local taxpayers. After, you know, insisting that the state provide the city some additional funds to help out with Hurricane Harvey relief and debris removal and all those things, the governor came through and provided a $50 million check, which made Sylvester Turner, the mayor, back down from his property tax increase. So if you recall, he started off with an 8.9% increase, then following week cut that in half, and then third week he finally backed down completely and pulled it off the table.
So the taxpayers are celebrating a victory. Now, do you think this is solely because the money came through? Surely they would have expected some state or federal money to come through. I'm thinking this is a victory for the taxpayers who were standing up and saying, hey, we just got slammed. Don't hit us again.
I think so, because they, you know, people spoke up so loudly. They had the first public hearing. You know, citizens turned out and testified about, you know, how horrible it is that we're going to tax people and it increase their taxes when they're suffering and trying to rebuild. And, you know, all the backlash from that was the first reason to cause him to cut it in half. And then it just kept coming after that. So he got in there before the second hearing, so he didn't have to sit through another 3 hours of getting yelled at. But I think it really was because taxpayers came out in full force and, you know, voiced their concerns about this.
Great, great. Well, tell us about this other story. You have another story up at Texas Scorecard about Mayor Turner trying to go around the comptroller there in the city on a $60 million contract. What's going on with that?
Yeah, well, that's really interesting because we're right now, obviously, a lot of the contracts coming through are emergency contracts, so they're trying to push them through City Hall as fast as possible. So, but this one, they're trying to push it through without even getting the proper, going through the proper channels and getting approval. It's a $60 million debris removal contract to get some of these trucks out there and start picking up some storm debris. But Turner wanted to avoid kind of the controller's review, if you will. So that would mean he would go and look at the companies that are going to be awarded the money from the contract, ensure there's no back taxes owed to the city, you know, ensure everything's up to snuff. And he wanted to skip that. He didn't want the controller to review that. Also in that was there's no funding source for this money. And that's kind of one of the requirements to pass a contract like that. So he really tried to push this through without anyone asking any questions.
Well, I appreciate that you're keeping an eye on things, keeping taxpayers informed. That's how we're winning. Taxpayers are winning all these victories. So thank you for that report, Charles.
No problem.
All right, now let's turn to Zach Maxwell and Kerry Cheshire with Empower Texans. Monday night, there was this kind of blow up at the Barra County Executive Committee meeting as a bunch of activists were shut down in an effort to advance a resolution against Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss. And Zach, you were there Monday night, so I want to hear your take. And Kerry, you can kind of put this in perspective for us. Let's get started with Zach. What actually happened in Barra County Monday night?
So conservatives tried to add a Rule 44 censure resolution to the agenda, and the leadership decided that they were not going to have that. They did every single procedural rule they could to ensure that that was not added to the agenda. And, you know, it felt eerily exactly like the Texas House run by Speaker Joe Strauss.
Yeah, let's talk about this. You know, during the recent special session, the Bexar County Executive Committee. And these are the Republican precinct chairs, the activists in Bexar County, San Antonio. This is where Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss is from. And now, for listeners who maybe aren't familiar with the Texas House and with Joe Strauss, a very liberal Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives in Texas, who's obstructed conservative reforms for years and kind of abused his power there. These group of people kind of passed a resolution saying, we don't like you as Speaker. They don't like their own representative as Speaker anymore. And then these activists were trying to advance a resolution that would actually impose some penalties on Representative Strauss. That's what was going on Monday night, right?
That's correct. They previously passed another resolution that wasn't the official Rule 44 resolution, and this was a much meatier version, an official Rule 44 resolution that, if passed, would have carried some weight.
Yeah, so the rules of the Republican Party of Texas allow under Rule 44 for activists to advance a censure resolution against a party official and actually have the party come in and impose some penalties on, in this case, legislators who are working against the party's platform and interests. This is something we've seen more and more around the state. Isn't that right, Kerry?
That's right, Tony. Ever since Rule 44 was added into the party platform, we've started to see it start to percolate through and through the grassroots. We see precinct chairs in counties across the state issue these resolutions against their own incumbent legislators. Joe Strauss has been the butt of a number of them. His allies, like State Affairs Chairman Byron Cook, who's really been his hatchet man in the Texas House, killing conservative reform, such as the Privacy Act, which kept men out of women's restrooms, school choice, and other affairs. He's been subject to the same thing in his own counties.
And so this was in Anderson County?
In Anderson County.
A group of precinct chairs there got together and put this resolution, and they passed that resolution against Cook. Isn't that right?
That's right, Tony. And here in Bexar County, you know, they passed a vote of no confidence resolution before. Now they were trying to do a censure resolution. And it's just showing that conservatives and Republican activists are frustrated. They're frustrated with the incumbents who have come in on conservative promises and failed to deliver while in office.
Yeah, and so let's turn back to Zach. What exactly, this was Robert Stovall, the county chairman there, is kind of a, I guess, perceived as a lackey of Strauss, a supporter of his. What was he doing to try and block this citizen-led effort?
Well, he was not recognizing people's citizens' motions to add the censure resolution to the agenda. He even threatened to remove one of the precinct chairs from the room, which he absolutely cannot do.
This is an elected, precinct chair who's got a duty to represent her constituents in this body, and this guy wants to just throw her out of the room because he doesn't like what she has to say.
That's correct. She voluntarily left for a moment to gather herself, and she came back in, and she kept right at it, and the chairman was not allowing anybody to speak, and oftentimes he was actually speaking over the precinct chairman that were trying to respectfully, gain the floor and make a motion to add this censure resolution, and he was completely ignoring them.
So what was the tone of the room? I mean, was the room against this Stovall, or was it kind of split 50-50? What was the situation?
I'd definitely say among the vocal majority of the members there were absolutely against Stovall and were for this resolution. And I'm not too sure. We don't have an official count, but if I were to guess, I would say that resolution had a pretty good chance of passing.
Wow. So they're having to act to shut this down. I mean, the whole thing is kind of eerily similar to what we've seen in the Texas House of Representatives, where Joe Strauss has abused his power as Speaker to shut down legislators from making motions and being, recognizing them to participate in the process. Now his kind of henchman there in Bexar County is doing exactly the same thing.
That is exactly correct.
All right. Well, thank you, Zach. Thank you, Kerry. Thank you for joining us. We'll have to continue to follow this as these citizens fight back.
Thank you, Tony.
For our next segment, I want to pull in Morgan Williamson, one of our producers here on the program. In addition to all the wonderful work Morgan does as a producer and kind of making sure the trains run on time with regard to Texas Scorecard Radio, I still think of Morgan as the queen of Twitter, you know, he's kind of the expert on Twitter. And I wanted to get your opinion about a breaking story. Over the last week or so, it was announced that President Trump will be appointing Texas Supreme Court Justice Don Willett to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. I guess I'll explain to folks the legal side of that. But I wanted to get your opinion. Why is this exciting to people who are on Twitter?
Yeah, well, thanks, Tony. It's great to be behind the microphone today. And I'm going to straighten my little Twitter crown really fast. But I think people are really excited on both sides of the aisle, on both sides of everything, just because of how the presence that Justice Willett has on Twitter. He has created a great little personalized persona for himself out there. And you have articles, if you look at the headlines, like what 90% of the articles that were written when Trump made this announcement involved, like the headlines themselves involved that he is on Twitter.
He's the tweeting judge, right?
He's the tweeting judge. He, he has over 100,000 Twitter followers. He's been written in, I think in 2014, was written up in the New York Times for his Twitter presence. And, people all over the place, well outside of Texas, know who Justice Willett is because of his Twitter presence.
I thought it was interesting. You know, there was a Think Progress piece that was trying to attack Justice Willett, and they were critical of him for some conservative things he's done on the Texas Supreme Court, mainly going back to that eyebrow threaders case,
right,
where he's defending the right of these aggrieved eyebrow threaders. If you don't know what eyebrow threading is, actually go down a whole rabbit trail on that, but the right of people to work and not to have to go through a bunch of crazy administrative loopholes to be able to work. And they want to say this is the most wildest, worst idea in the history of ideas. But what I thought was the funniest thing about the whole thing is that they didn't really have anything negative to say about the man, right? Everybody was like, oh, he's got a great personality and he's very fun and all this, but you got to ignore all those good things because we got to try and create him into a boogeyman, you know, because the president has appointed him. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Even the left is kind of saying, okay, this is a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, the Think Progress piece that came out recently, the first line, they call him charming. There's been everyone from the Texas Observer, which is left leaning here in Texas, and Think Progress and all of that. You got the major media outlets that have covered it. Texas Scorecard covered it. I haven't seen anyone be able to say a negative thing about him. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to continue to follow him. I'm sure he'll continue to tweet. Look forward to his confirmation hearings and seeing him be on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the federal appellate bench for Texas. So it's a really, really big life move for Justice Willett.
Yeah, should be fun.
It's good to have on the program this week State Representative Briscoe Kane, a legislator from the Houston area. Representative Kane, you're on the line.
I am. Thanks, Tony, for having me on. I love the radio program.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us. We have you on. We wanted to talk a little bit about some news that has been breaking over the past week. But for listeners who are out there, maybe from West Texas or some other part of the state, tell folks who you are.
Well, I'm Briscoe Kane. I'm one of the state representatives here down in Harris County. For the state, that means there's actually 24 of us in Harris County. I represent Texas House District 128. I'm a freshman and a member of the Texas House Freedom Caucus.
Now, this is a group of the 12 most conservative Republican legislators in the state House, and so you're part of that group that's been kind of fighting for a grassroots perspective in the legislature.
Yeah, you nailed it when you said a grassroots perspective. Some would say what we're doing is novel, and I think it's kind of an easy thing. Our loyalty, grassroots, and the Republican Party platform.
Right, and so what we wanted to talk about was some events that are going on over this past week. On Monday, you went to go speak at the Federalist Society group at
Texas Southern University and found your rights and the rights of that group as Texans, their civil rights being violated. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, well, the Texas Southern University, the law school, the Thurgood Marshall School of Law there, their federal society had contacted me about, you know, speaking. And when I heard about it, I was pretty excited that they had a federal society chapter there. In case the listeners aren't aware of the Federal Society, it's a organization of conservative and libertarian lawyers and law students. And their chapters on law school campuses are really there to give the originalist and kind of textualist constitutional view, something that most law schools and most law professors don't teach. And so they're there to bring this alternative view into the classroom, and they hold events so that speakers can come and educate students about those views of the conservative side of things. And so when I heard that this would be at TSU, I jumped on it. I was excited that that school had a conservative group.
Yeah. Now, Representative Kane, you're an attorney, practicing attorney. I'm a practicing attorney as well. So I was in the Federalist Society. I assume you were a member of the Federalist Society back in law school as well.
I was. Yeah, I was the president of my law school Federalist Society. So yeah. I've got some loyalties there, and I see the value in it.
Yeah, and as you were saying, this isn't some really radical group. It's really just bringing a balance of discourse to universities that are, you know, typically overwhelmingly liberal, but this is an opportunity to hear some conservative and libertarian perspective. So the group at Texas Southern University, and Texas Southern University, historically black college, historically black university in Houston, but it has this, you know, which, you know, it's like good to hear that there's a conservative, you know, group for lawyers at this university. You know, one would assume the university is kind of dominated by Democratic politics, but it's good to hear that this group exists there. So they've invited you in to speak about what?
Well, the event was billed as kind of a legislative update about the special session, but, you know, our plans was to discuss policy and take questions from the law students in order to talk about what they care about.
And so this was all invited by these students who wanted to have you on, and then approved, you know, I assume by the administration, and everything set up there in some room there on the campus?
Yes. You know, everything was signed off by the administration. We were approved by the dean of the law school. The flyer for the event was made by the law school. The room reservation, food, permission to bring food inside the classroom, that was all done. They, you know, all the boxes under the student manual for the law school were checked, but as we're going to discuss, there were some problems, according to the president of Texas Southern University.
Well, we've got a clip queued up. Let's go to the clip of the crowd shouting you down from giving your speech. So let's run clip one.
No hate anywhere.
You don't get a platform here.
No hate anywhere.
You don't get a platform here.
When a racist comes to town,
shut it down.
No
hate. So what was this group that was, you know, freaking out and shouting at you? And what did the administration do whenever they kind of came in and took over the room?
Well, the group is an organization we're all starting to be very familiar with for protesting and shouting down conservative speakers, and that's the Black Lives Matter organization. Sadly, they essentially kind of stormed into the event with signs and T-shirts, you know, the T-shirts literally saying Black Lives Matters, which I agree with, right? I think we all agree that all lives matter, and signs saying, you know, pretty offensive things like Briscoe wears your hood, as in a Klan hood. And, you know, some quotes by me and other things saying that I was transphobic and, you know, just a bigot and racist. They began chanting things that, I think that were in the clip that you just played, as people can hear. And at some point, though, they then began to be escorted out by the police for being unruly. And then I actually, you know, took the podium, began to do an introduction. At that point, the president of TSU walked in and shut the program down. And as people heard, the excuse was that the event was not properly done.
So in essence, it really wasn't this group of protesters that shut the event down. It was the administration itself, reversing course. You had the law school invite you in and host and do all of these things. And then the actual overall university dean shows up and says, no, we're gonna pull a rule out of our back pocket and try and shut this thing down and run Mr. Kane off campus.
That's exactly what happened. You know, there's a duty under the First Amendment that the government has to protect the speaker, all the way up to the point that their safety is actually threatened. And it's not enough to say that there's a mob coming. They actually have to, defend me from that mob until they can no longer protect us. And there were police in the room, and they could have handled it had a mob that they, quote-unquote, said was coming actually made it to the room. Yeah. And sadly, though, I was escorted off of the campus by three uniformed Houston police officers back to my car.
So this is a concept, as an attorney, you're an attorney, we're familiar with this concept called the heckler's veto. Basically, a group of people show up and they don't like what somebody has to say, and so they react violently, or they try and shout down the speaker, try and shout over the speaker, just to suppress the ability to hold the event. And what we're seeing here with Black Lives Matter and with other leftist groups is that they have just adopted this as their tactic. And the legal reality is the administration's supposed to be defending you, the speaker, and the Federalist Society, the students who wanted to have you in and hear what you had to say, they're supposed to be defending those folks, not, condoning and aiding and abetting this, radical group that's engaging in a heckler's veto.
That's exactly right. And what happened to me by the administration not protecting our speech or the Federal Society students' speech is not new. We're seeing this across the country, and it's got to stop. We can no longer tolerate it.
Well, and the crazy thing is this is affecting mainstream conservative Republican people. I mean, they have a sign there saying, hey, Briscoe, where's your hood? But, I mean, I guess I'll ask. You don't have a pointy white hood hiding in a closet somewhere, right?
No pointy white hood, and they said I was had ties to the alt-right, and I would say that that's definitely not true either.
Yeah, so here's the reality. You're just a mainstream conservative Republican, and you come onto a campus, and despite the fact that you and the folks who elected you politically dominate this state, you basically don't have civil rights at a state institution in this state right now.
That's exactly right, Tony. And it's amazing that a public institution that is funded by the legislature is silencing the speech of a member of the legislature or a member or an organization that's conservative. We're run by Republicans, yet they are treating us as if we are outcasts and not deserving of constitutional protections.
So I guess the answer here is going to be something. We're going to have to fight back. I guess you have a unique ability as a legislator, assuming you're reelected this next term, to go back to the legislature and fight back and defend freedom of speech from these kind of attacks. But I guess the answer ultimately for these students is, they got to sue their university.
Well, that's an option the students have, and I'm not aware right now whether they're going to pursue that, but I think it's a good idea. I think we can't tolerate these kinds of things, and we make bad policy by tolerating them, and something should be done.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Well, I think this story is going to continue to develop. We want to have you back on soon sometime. Representative Kane, I know you've got some other fights that you're kind of engaged in. We'd love to hear your perspective on the legislative session as well. So thank you for joining us on the program this week.
All right. Thank you, Tony, and thank you to your program. You guys are kind of really on the leading edge, getting the truth out about what's going on in Texas and politics here.
Well, no better endorsement than that. Thank you for that, Representative Kane.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, if anyone out there willing to associate themselves with the Texas Democratic Party, if so, you might be able to be their nominee for governor. We'll hear more about that in a commentary this week from Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Just 30 years ago, Democrats were the dominant political party in Texas. Today, they can't put together a statewide slate of respectable nominees. Howdy, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with today's commentary. The last time a Democrat won statewide office in Texas was 1994. Since then, their party has become a shadow of its former self. In the 21st century, Democratic gubernatorial candidates have only mustered around 40% of the statewide vote. Wendy Davis, the 2014 loser for the Donkey Party, got 38.9% of the general election vote. Some establishment Republicans are working to rewrite the history of the Democrats in an effort to quell criticism from the conservative majority. In this retelling of political history, the Democrats fell due to infighting within the family. The intended lesson? Shut up and don't criticize the party. That's nonsense. Texas Democrats fell apart in Texas because they followed their national party off the liberal cliff. They wanted to impose big government collectivism on the historically self-reliant Texas. The Democratic Party took themselves off the path of governing leadership because they got themselves so far out of step with the state's electorate. General election voters in Texas simply aren't interested in importing California-style liberalism. Thank you very much. Even Democrats are getting weary of how far their party has strayed into the leftist abyss. Not only did Wendy Davis fail miserably in the 2014 general election, she lost nearly every South Texas county in her own primary to a no-name, unfunded opponent. Hispanic and Latino Democrats weren't impressed with another white liberal coming in and telling them what to do. Just wait until they meet the only person currently running for governor as a Democrat in 2018. His name is Jeffrey Payne, a businessman from Dallas. Sounds reasonable, right? Wrong. Jeffrey Payne's business is a gay nightclub themed around leather and blue jean fetishes. I mentioned he was from Dallas, right? Not only that, but the internet is teeming with pictures of him wearing his international Mr. Leather sash that he was awarded at a trade show several years ago. If Payne wins, he'll make the abortion-obsessed Wendy Davis look almost mainstream. The problem is that the Democrats simply cannot attract authentic Texas talent. Electable people who are in step with the values and principles of Texans are conservatives, not northeastern blue bloods or left coast liberals. What few borderline respectable office holders the Democrats have all come from heavily gerrymandered districts drawn to produce Democrats. They don't want to give up their fiefdoms to get 38% in a statewide race. The lesson of the Democrats' fall from electoral grace isn't one of family squabbles, but of intellectual and ideological betrayal. The Democrats decided that serving themselves and their party was more important than serving the people. The Democrats decided to strive against Texas' conservative values and were rewarded with a quarter century on the outs and counting. Voters didn't suddenly decide in 1994 that elephants were more fashionable than donkeys. They realized that the stated principles of the GOP more closely aligned with their own. Voters use political parties as tools. We're not married to them. They aren't family. When a party gets out of touch with the voters, the party ceases to be a viable tool, and then it ceases to exist. The lesson for Republicans is simple. Stay true to the principles of Texas, and you'll keep winning. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
Well, I've got my lucky rabbit's foot here in my hand, and I'm just hoping that the Democrats put up international Mr. Leather as their gubernatorial nominee. I think the entertainment value of that alone will make the next year for political observers across Texas. But that's all I have for you this week on Texas Scorecard Radio. Until next week, you can catch stories being published on a day-to-day basis at texasscorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.